You're listening to Straight Shooters, a straightforward golf podcast that'll straighten out your game. And here are your hosts, Keith Bennett and Henry Stettina.
What's going on, everybody? I'm here with Keith Bennett, part of the Straight Shooters golf podcast. We got a fantastic conversation today about practice. Keith and I talk about this topic quite regularly. He's had some questions. I've had some experiences recently that we both want to share with you. So I'm going to kick it over to Keith. Keith, how are you doing today? And tell us a little bit about what we're going to be talking about.
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. Yeah. I'm excited to talk about today's topic because it's something that keeps coming up. It's something that's going to keep coming up as golf instructors and as we work with golfers who want to improve their game. And that is, you know, I've been getting a lot of questions lately from my in-person students, but then, you know, people online on Instagram, like, how do I get the most out of my practice? How do I structure my practice? What would effective practice even look like? How long is an effective practice? How many balls should I hit? What parts of the game should I cover? You know, all of these things. I think what we're coming to find out is, yes, technique's important. Yes, you know, holding the club is important. All these fundamental things are important. But once those things are in place, and for everybody, you know, that how long that takes will be different. But once those things are in place, we need to understand that just showing up to the range, taking your large bucket of balls from the golf shop, putting it in the basket next to the hitting mat, and just starting to hit, and then kind of getting 15, 20 balls in and wondering, okay, what am I doing today? What's the point of this? How do I know if I'm getting any better? I think a lot of people go through that process and that routine, and leave each session, you know, maybe they work themselves into a groove and they hit one final good one, so they leave on a happy note. But if they were reflecting on the whole range session as a whole, they kind of realize that there was maybe 20, 30 balls in the middle there where there was just kind of like a lot of wasted energy, not really getting anything out of it. Not really, they can't really leave saying, okay, when I go play on Saturday, I did X, Y, and Z that's going to make me, you know, perform better on the golf course. And I think that's something that's, I think, understanding effective practice is going to be something that's going to be talked about a lot in the next 5 years to truly, truly make golfers improve. So, you know, I want to chat a little bit about an experience that I had yesterday with one of my 1% program members. And it's kind of a unique situation. He works for a club company, and in their headquarters area, they have a little simulator space, and it's kind of off to the side. It's not really in the main area of fitting. It's kind of off to the side. It's sort of in an empty room, and not a lot of people kind of go in and out of there. So it's a nice quiet space, but there's a TrackMan, there's a simulator screen, and it's a good place to get 20 minutes of effective practice in. So it was kind of a crummy day yesterday, and I went over to that simulator space with him, and we had about an hour session, but a lot of it was talking about how would he in a 20-minute, 25-minute time span get the most out of his practice. And we've been working a lot on, he's somebody who came to me with a club path that was pretty severely into out, right? He could easily get into that 10 degree, 11 degree into out number. And that felt like a normal swing. And his club face was quite closed. So, you know, he definitely had a two-way miss where he'd block it out to the left if the face was open, or he'd hit a pretty severe hook to the right if the face was closed. And he's a lefty, by the way. And so we've been working on neutralizing his club path. And we've been doing this really cool thing where I said, okay, great. You've got this simulator space. All I want you to do is turn the simulator off, and you're going to put one number up on the screen, one TrackMan number, and that's going to be your club path. So you're not going to look at ball flight. You're not going to look at face number on the screen. It's just going to show you your club path. And I just want you to sit there and figure out what it has to feel like for you to get, you know, a zero path, which for him, if he's coming from 10 degrees from the inside, it's most likely going to have to feel about 10, 12 degrees from out to in for him to hit a zero path. And that was super, that was a big revelation for him to have those sensations and to feel what it has to feel like just to get those club path numbers. And I think the biggest thing that he took away and that really struck me was how quickly he was able to do that with feedback. Feedback being the TrackMan number telling him what his path number was. Because he said to me, I don't think I would have been able to come to that realization of what it had to feel like sensation wise without that number on the screen, without that feedback telling me what the path number was. So once he was able to do that, we added in the club face number. So now we had club path and club face were the only two numbers on the screen. And I said, okay, let's work on getting that club face number a little bit open to the target. So for him, that would be a negative number. And so we were working on club path somewhere around zero and face angle negative. And those two things, again, felt really wild to him. Then what we did once he was able to do that is we added the ball flight onto the screen, and we just looked at carry. So I said, hey, and he's been working out for many years. And once we started going about it this way, it really clicked for him when I said, hey, if you can only produce the path number of, let's say, a range between -2 and +2 and a face angle between 0 and -2, we gave him some parameters. If you can only hit your 8-iron 100 yards doing those things successfully, that's your benchmark for today. Next week, it might be 110 yards. The following week, it might be 120 yards that you're able to stay within those parameters. And it really resonated with him because he said that's how he would go about improving in the gym, adding weight to a squat or adding weight to a deadlift. Is he wouldn't try to, you know, just because he squatted one successfully with the bar and no weight, he wouldn't try to go 500 pounds on the next one just because he did one good rep at a lower weight, right? And he goes, oh yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I would never do that in anything else that I've gotten better at. And I think because golf allows you to just hit it and swing as far as you want with no real life consequences, you're not going to injure yourself necessarily. You might, but you're not usually going to injure yourself by swinging fast. It doesn't force you to stay at a lower repetition distance wise, because again, there's no consequences. Like if I'm playing a pickup basketball game and I keep chucking threes and missing, my team's going to go, dude, you're not playing until you're like, we're done playing with you. You know what I mean? Like that scene Along Comes Polly or whatever that movie is with Ben Stiller. And he's just Rain Man. He's just chucking up threes and missing. Like you wouldn't play with that. You know what I mean? There's no real life consequences in golf. You're just hitting balls on a range by yourself. No one's going to stop you from swinging fast. But he went, oh yeah, this is how I would get better in the gym. This is how me and my trainer talk about it. And I know you've had experiences with that, Henry, but that was effective practice, effective mindset, how to get better at it. We took away the ball flight. We just gave him one metric of feedback, club path, until he could do that. We added club face, no ball flight. Once he could do that, we added ball flight and carry number. And he said, okay. And I mean, this guy, he understands the process. You know, he's been sending me texts. Hey, you know, 9 out of 10 successful reps at 110 yards today. Like, you know, he's hanging out in those lower distances. And then he does play golf on Saturdays, right? And he hit bunt, cut, 200 yard drivers all day. And he shot 74, right? Because he was willing to say, I'm just going to slow down. I'm going to put my ego aside and I'm going to hit these bunt cut drivers, 200 yards down the middle. He said he blocked a few, but they were findable, right? He didn't lose any golf balls. And so I thought that was a really cool process and progress of getting better the right way. And it's going to serve him so much better in the coming months. And the progress is going to be really cool as he continues to get better at it. So that's kind of been my recent experience with it lately.
That's really cool. I think that could just be the whole episode right there, man. I mean,
yeah,
that's kind of the process that I would expect a person to go through.
Yeah.
I think it's really neat that he related that to his fitness journey. I think that you bring up a really good point that there isn't really any serious consequence in golf with trying to swing fast and hit it far. And so people are just freewheeling it out on the range. And if there was a consequence of, say, getting hurt or some unrealistic, you know, achievement of lifting 300-400 pounds, a person would never try to do that. And right. So it forces the person to do something that's more manageable for their current skill level. It's interesting though, you know, you bring up a really good point about using feedback, having a goal and providing a person with feedback. This player, you know, wanted a specific ball flight, and you were able to use a simulator, some kind of a launch monitor to identify face and path. And today's day and age, that's becoming pretty common. And I'd be interested to know how many golfers actually have access to that kind of technology, because we talk about it so frequently in our world. But I would think that so many golfers still don't have access to that. And it recalls, you know, my early days playing golf, we didn't even have rangefinders. We didn't have this current understanding of face to path relationships, that the ball starts on the face and it curves based on the difference between face and path. We kind of knew that, but it wasn't as accurate as it is today. All we knew was that if the face was closed, the ball hooked. Mm-hmm. And if the face was open, it sliced. If the ball was forward in our stance, it went higher. If the ball was back in our stance, it went lower. And we use that matrix, that understanding, to create ball flights. You know, if a person is slicing the golf ball, let's start seeing something different. Let's start hooking the golf ball for a while. If I ask them why they're slicing it, most of the time they can't answer. But when I let them know that the face is open, they all seem to say, oh yeah, I know that. Okay, well, what are you doing about it?
Right.
Right.
Oh yeah. I know the face is open.
I know the face is open. Okay. Well, have you tried closing it? No. Why not? I don't know. It's like, well, that's what you're supposed to do. That's right. The answer. You have the answer. You're just not going about changing it.
Well, maybe they try it and then it doesn't work perfectly the first few tries, and then they bail on it is pretty common too.
Yeah, that could be the case too. And like you said, maybe it's because we're trying that at full speed.
Right. Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we need to see the ball. You know, even to this day, if I'm struggling with any part of my game, I break it down to a smaller level. If I'm struggling with my driver, I work on drivers that go 100 yards, total distance. I'm chipping with the driver.
Yep.
Yesterday, I played a round of golf. I went to the range to warm up, not to practice, but to warm up. And I had a swing thought that I was working on, of really maintaining the loft of the club face. And I'm working on it with 30-yard pitch shots, and then 90-yard wedge shots, and then a 9-iron, and then a 7-iron, and then a 5-iron, and then a driver. And then I went back to the shorter clubs to finish. And you know, all the while it was very smooth and controlled, and I was working on something specific, and it lasted for probably 20 to 30 minutes.
Right.
And like you said, it doesn't have to be a long period of time, but it has to be an effective period of time. We have to have a purpose. We can't just go out there haphazardly and just beat golf balls and, you know, not necessarily know what we're working towards. You know, there's six universal laws of ball flight. We have centerness of contact, club face, club path, dynamic loft, angle of attack, and club head speed. We should be working on one, possibly two of those in each practice session.
Yes.
These are universal truths that apply to every golfer on this planet, and will forever apply to every golfer on this planet, because they're based on the laws of physics. You've identified with your player two of them, club face and then club path, and their relationship between one another. There are additional principles that affect those laws. For example, the grip can influence the club face. The swing plane can influence angle of attack and club path. And we could go down the list, and they can affect multiple of these laws. But at the end of the day, we need to know some kind of a cause and effect relationship between them. And so many golfers are discrediting the fundamentals of aim, of alignment, of ball position, of grip, of posture. But yet we look at tour players here in a couple of weeks, the Masters is going to happen and we're going to see some shots of them on the range. I'm guessing there's going to be coverage on the range that a person can log into on ESPN or some kind of additional app. Watch those moments on the range and you'll see people with alignment sticks working on those fundamentals. You'll see them with a coach providing feedback. You'll see them with TrackMan, probably working on distance control. You'll see them on the putting green using mirrors and tees. Tiger is known for that gait drill. Scottie Scheffler might have that grip trainer. He's the number one player in the world, has a molded grip trainer. You know, these fundamentals are what's so important, and people want to leave that so quickly, get to something fancier. So I think that it really boils down to having a good setup, a good fundamental foundation, and then working on something specifically. If it's ball flight related, we need to work on hitting it a certain trajectory, high, mid, low, and a certain curvature, draw, fade, or straight. That's it. That's all there is to it.
Yep. Yeah. I always come back mentally to this video that I found, or somebody sent me, I can't remember where I found it, of Steph Curry's warm-up routine for all of his practice sessions. And he starts out, you know, directly underneath the rim, making one-handed shots, you know, and they all have to go right into the net, you know, no rim, right? Just working one-handed. And then he backs up 3 feet, same deal, right? Has to go in, no rim. Backs up to the free throw line, same deal. 3-point line, same deal. Halfway between the you know, half court, same deal. And then he shoots some half court shots. And, you know, he's the most prolific, you know, most 3 points made. Everyone knows him for his crazy, you know, 3-point shots and off balance and taking, you know, shots from well outside the 3-point range. But that's not all he's doing in practice, right? He can do that because his fundamentals and his practice routine allows him to do that in a game, right? And his practice routine is regimented, structured. It's working on the fundamentals. That's how he got to that point. And a lot of people just want to skip those and get to the 3-point shots or get to the half court shots because those are the fun ones that get put on ESPN. And those are the long drives that we get, you know, get to talk to people about in the bar after the round. But, you know, I think it's funny how in this game we'll remember that one long drive and then we'll kind of cast aside the 4 to 5 three putts and the 7 chunked chips. And we'll go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll figure all that out. Yeah. Yeah. I'll figure that out later. Right. Just, you know, how many people come to me and go, I want to learn to hit the drive straight. And I go, okay, let's, you know, how's the rest of your game? Oh, you know, I three putt a lot, but I feel like I could get that figured out. Or I feel like I could, you know, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, well, you haven't, but you haven't figured that out. And wouldn't that probably help you hit the center of the face more with your driver if you could, you know, hit a solid chip shot? I know they're slightly different motions as far as the angles of attack, potentially stance width a little bit, but it's still the coordination of hitting, you know, the center of the face. And it's really strange. Again, I just come back to, with golf, there's no real life consequences for a bad shot other than your score, right? Which doesn't really affect your life. You're going to go home and you know, you're still going to have to go to work the next day. You don't lose any money other than what you paid for the round. Like, there's no consequences for ripping a drive 40 yards out of bounds. There's no consequences. In any other sport, there would be consequences for trying that, you know, with a team, or in tennis, if you were just trying to hit first serves at 100 miles an hour and never getting it in court, you'd lose every game and nobody would play with you. They're like, dude, you can't even start a rally, you know? So it's really interesting how golf doesn't have that sort of limitation, and it allows people to just go and wail away and suffer. And then they're like, well, I'm not getting any better. It's like, yeah, duh. Like, I don't know what to tell you. It's pretty obvious. Like, can't you sit back and realize that, like, swinging as hard as you can and having horrible balance and, like, isn't, you know, going to get you any better? So I think inherently there are some difficulties to this game because of that. And then, you know, I'd say inherently there's not a lot of info on there about, you know, out there about practicing, right? We just kind of, as a golf community, we go down a lot of buzzword rabbit holes, right? Shallowing, rotation, you know, swinging left, all these things that have nothing to do with practice, nothing to do with getting better, and golfers go try them. And it's not their fault. That's just what's being put out there in the golf world, you know, and that's kind of sexier stuff. So it sells. And that's what's on YouTube because it sells, it gets views. But like how to go chip and putt for 30 minutes effectively as a practice, I bet you can't find much information on that out there in the world. Because it wouldn't get a lot of views, but it's what people need, which I find is kind of interesting.
Yeah. And to your point about Steph Curry, you know, shooting these one-handed layups basically to start his practice session. I mean, how many golfers are out there starting with two footers and three footers? I mean, if those are so simple, just go make 10 in a row and let's move on.
Right.
But that's the fundamentals. That's the foundation. Throw a chalk line down on a straight uphill putt and make 10 in a row from 3 feet.
Right.
Guess what? You're still working on contact face and path. Yep. You still need to roll that ball on your intended line.
Yep.
And then walk off the green and work on some 8-iron or 7-iron chip shots, some low bump and runs. You know, you told me the story recently about Short Game Chef working with a group of people working on chipping. We're not talking pitching, high lofted, fancy, you know, shots. We're talking chipping and a putting stroke with an 8-iron or a 7-iron, getting the ball rolling as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
You know, we have Division I players here in town, coaches that I've talked to who say that they have a hard time getting their players to work on that shot, that basic fundamental shot. That is like Steph Curry shooting those short shots to start his practice. And we just finished a series of lessons for our PGM students where they gave three lessons to an intermediate golfer. And what was interesting was, you know, handfuls of them came back to me and said, you know, it was really interesting because the assignment told me I needed to give at least one full swing lesson and at least one short game lesson. And they found that their students were having the same flaws or the same faults in their short game as they were in their full swing.
All the time.
I said, isn't that interesting? Now, which is it going to be easier to improve, their short game or their full swing? They all said their short game. They said, so focus on those principles. Number one, it's going to improve that part of their game. And number two, it's going to set the foundation for improving their full swing, which is what they're really after in the first place.
Yep. Yep. I can't tell you how many times I've worked with a player for, let's say, five sessions in a package of lessons. And, you know, they don't want to work on putting right off the bat, but eventually I make them work on putting. And we look at their putting stroke and we go, lo and behold, your full swing, you take the club way outside and you cut across it. Guess what you're doing with your putting stroke? You're going outside and you're cutting across it and you're pulling it and you're missing left. It's the exact same flaws. If you could work on a nice little arc, keeping the club connected to the target line with a putting stroke, it's going to help your 9-iron bump and run. And guess what? That's going to help your 50 degree, you know, from 10 yards away. And that's going to help your 58 degree. And that's going to help your, you know, wedge shot. It just, it's so simple. If people really sat down and go, yeah, of course I would start with putting. Of course I would do the easy stuff first. Of course. But they just don't want to do it because it is, and I get it. It's fun as hell to hit a driver far and straight when you connect with one. I think everybody can agree with that. But doing that one out of 50 times, like, let's kind of get real a little bit. Like, why is one out of 50 a good enough success rate for people, you know, to think that that's worth their time, you know, trying to fix it at, you know, their full speed with horrible balance and a bad grip and standing too far or, you know, ball position not correct. It's just, I think inherently everybody understands it, but there's just something funny about not wanting to go hit two footers. You know, unless a coach was standing there forcing you to do it, or unless you said in my heart of hearts, I understand this is the best way to go about getting better, and I'm going to be disciplined to not hit irons for the next week. I'm going to just go putt and chip for a week, right? If you did that with good fundamentals and a structured practice routine, you would become a better player. But very few people are willing to do that.
I think you just said something that reminded me a little bit about maybe why a person wouldn't go do that. We've multiple times said fundamentals, fundamentals, fundamentals.
Yep.
It's also the case that we got to have a clear concept of what to do.
Yes, good
we
point.
Need a clear concept of what to do with the golf club during the swing.
Good point.
Most golfers are working the golf ball. They're wanting to avoid it going right. They're wanting to avoid topping it. They're wanting to help it into the air. They're wanting to make it go far. They're wanting to do something with it.
Yep.
And so they don't have a clear idea of what to do with the golf club. Even around the greens, players who struggle with chipping or pitching tend to be trying to help the ball up into the air.
Yes.
They have a misunderstanding of what gets the ball in the air. It's not them helping it up. It's not an angle of attack issue. It's actually a loft issue. The club is designed to get the ball into the air. And by them trying to do it, it's negating the engineering that's put into that golf club.
Mm-hmm.
In putting, the putting stroke gets the ball in the air. Look at slow motion camera or go in the morning when there's dew on the grass and you'll see the ball hopping as it starts. There is 2 to 4 degrees of loft on the putter. It launches the ball in the air, but no one that I know of is trying to do that.
Right.
And so what we need to do is to recognize that there is a swinging motion. There is a concept that a person should be trying to achieve with the club that produces the ball flight. And if they can start to recognize that, then we would have more purpose to our practice because we'd be less involved in what the ball's doing and more involved with what we have control over, which is the golf club, which in turn produces the ball flight.
You know what? I think we just got our topic for next week's discussion.
Perfect.
So stay tuned, everybody, for that discussion. And we'll kind of maybe make this a part two of how to practice, you know, moving the golf club effectively. I think that's a good place to kind of wrap up today's practice. And we'll just kind of leave you with a thought of like, think about how you would get better at anything. Let's say, and I challenge all of you to go and learn to produce your signature with your non-dominant hand. And I challenge you to do it slowly at first. And I challenge you to do it as fast as you do it with your dominant hand. And tell me how long you're going to keep going as fast as you can do it with your dominant hand and think that that's an effective way to go about it, right? I bet you're going to think slowing down is probably a better way. I bet you're going to practice letter by letter, in fact. You know, you might not even try to link it all together. I bet you practice separately letter by letter with your non-dominant hand. That's how you would get better at anything, and it's no different in golf. So we'll leave you with that. Henry, great conversation as always, my man. Let's go and make some golfers better this week. As always, everybody, if you want to reach out to us on Instagram with some topic ideas or just some feedback on the episodes, we really enjoy hearing what you guys think. So, Henry, I'll sign off with you, brother. Great talking to you, and we'll chat next week.
Take care, man. It's been a fantastic time. For those that are interested, you can find both of us on Instagram or Skillist. We do provide online golf lessons, and so feel free to reach out, and we'd be happy to work with you individually. Take care, buddy. Have a good week.
All right. Later.
Do you want to work one-on-one with either Henry or Keith? Well, you're in luck. Both Henry and Keith offer online lessons and monthly coaching subscriptions using the Skillist app. Online coaching allows you to learn at your own pace by digesting smaller chunks of information more frequently. Download Skillist, search for Henry or Keith, and get started today.